Abhishek, can I ask about whether the methods and teachings of a lineage can only be passed on by authorised teachers, or could they be shared by anyone who feels they've understood them?
I think that if you change the elements of the question and make it about brain surgery, you would probably have your answer. That's what it seems, that in the spiritual dimension, all the standard rules of procedure are thrown away as if certain things were possible. Obviously, you know, if you're going to get someone to look at your car, who are you going to get to look at your car? Someone who's tinkered with the car a bit, or somebody who's a trained mechanic? There has to be a training there for almost anything. And of course, the more important the procedure is, and the greater the risks are of the procedure, the more the person has to be qualified. So really, it's the same as everything else.
And if you have a qualified or a teacher, someone with experience, a serious practitioner, is it possible for someone like that to develop and adapt the teachings of a lineage if they think that seems to fit better for a given audience or time or context?
Well, everything is always adapted in terms of teaching, because you have your language. So that when I teach in English, I teach in English. And that is an adaptation of what I was taught, because I received it in English. I didn't receive it in Tibetan, although my teachers talked in Tibetan. It was then translated into a strange kind of English with verb at end of sentence coming. And so I've had to turn that then into an English that is understood here. But other than that, what is adapted? If something is taught that applies to a human being in terms of human consciousness, I think a lot is made of the differences between different cultures. There are differences, but the differences are not colossal in terms of the five elements. In terms of basic human drives, it's more or less the same. Everyone is interested in their own advantage. And if you want to not be interested purely in your own advantage, that's not going to be easy, and you need some help with how to do that, how to approach it. But in terms of adapting, I'd be interested to know what was adapted and why. I don't really see that there's a great difference. In my time of teaching, I haven't really noticed much of a change in people, not in the basic form of how they are and what they want.
Sometimes you hear it said that there have been Buddhas and teachers who are said to have gained realization without a human teacher. Does that mean that it's possible to have a Buddhist teacher, an authentic Buddhist teacher, who doesn't belong to a lineage of human teachers then?
Well, you could say that of Dudrum Lingpa, he received all his teachings directly from Guru Rinpoche, but that's fairly rare. I think you can't make a common rule for rare instances. There are always these cases of people who gain realization with very little contact with anything, but that is extremely rare. It's like, you know, starting new religions, for example. You know, we're going to do something completely different with Buddhism. and we're going to represent it in this way. And, well, if your name is Jesus or Muhammad, maybe you can do it. Occasionally someone comes along who does that, but that's rare. You know? And I don't think they set out to do it. I think that that's what's interesting. I did study the Gospel of Matthew when I was at school, and I don't recall Jesus ever having got up one morning and said, you know, I'm going to start a new religion. I don't think that happened. It evolved around him and after him, and what developed. I don't know anything about Islam at all, so I can't comment on what Muhammad's intentions were, but...
And where we have a situation, which is the more usual situation than when you have a lineage of human teachers, it's often the case in terms of the traditional setting of Buddhist teachings that you have the teacher talking and students listening and asking questions. There seems to be a current move away from that model somewhat, to have the teacher in a role a little bit more like a life coach, or where there's more interactive dialogue-based learning going on between the students. Do you think there are advantages or disadvantages to these different kinds of learning situations?
Mm-hmm. Well, I've never really experienced that, so it's difficult to say. But if you're going to have dialogue, usually that kind of situation is, making a movie perhaps, and people are contributing their ideas. I think it works quite well in that situation. But if you're going to have a dialogue with everyone contributing, then it assumes everyone has something equal to contribute. And if people are trying to learn something, what exactly are they going to contribute apart from their lack of information? So I'm not sure how that would function. It would have to be described to me as to how that would work. I mean, you know, I suppose it's one of these things that sounds as if it's a good idea, but then you look at it and ask what would happen, and I don't understand what would happen, apart from people expressing ideas and other people listening to them, and then either deciding to go along with the teacher or to ignore the teacher because one of them had a better idea. I'm not sure how that would go. Why have a teacher at all? You know, if that's the case, if the teacher can be overridden because everyone else has a better idea, then why have the teacher there? I think it's non-functional from that point of view. I mean, why not just get rid of the teacher? Why not just not call it Buddhism at all, just start a new religion? I think that whoever's proposing this needs to take responsibility for what they're doing and just call it something else, you know, the committee approach or whatever.
Mm. I think it comes from this, you know, this sort of attempt to find some kind of a workaround for people who want to practice Tantra or Dzogchen but without having a teacher.
Like people who want to engage in brain surgery without having taken the doctor's training. That's what it sounds like to me, which makes it sound like nonsense. I mean, I'm not just deriding it for no reason, but I really don't understand why anyone imagines that something like that could lead anywhere. And you really do have to compare it to something else in the world. You know, there's no field of gaining experience in the world that doesn't require a proper training and a proper qualification. So why spirituality or religion is somehow exempt from this, and you can short circuit or shortcut the thing, I don't know. You know, there's no reason why that should be possible.
And in terms of how the current teacher-student relationship is functioning sometimes, there seems to be an increasing amount of online and digital teaching, including transmissions and online ordination as well. Could you say what you think about
that? Well, I've heard about this. I wouldn't say it's impossible, but I would say that it's extremely rare. If the teacher who was broadcasting the transmission happened to be a Mahasiddha, and the people listening happened to be at a high level of practice experience, then maybe. I certainly couldn't do it, and certainly wouldn't do it. I would never offer transmission in that way. I would compare it to making love by video link. You know, you could both take your clothes off in your respective homes, and you could undoubtedly do something or other, but it would be called masturbation. That's what it would be. It could only be making love if it happened in the same room. And in the same part of the room, too. There'd actually have to be physical contact, otherwise what would it be? Personally, I don't like speaking to people through a camera. So, I mean, at the moment, I'm not speaking to a camera, I'm talking to you. The fact that I'm being filmed is irrelevant to me. I don't know who's out there who might be hearing this, but... During the time of COVID, we did do this because we thought, well, there is a need for some kind of communication with the world. But I really didn't enjoy it much because when I teach, I look at people. I look at the expressions on people's faces. I wander around the room and I notice what's happening. You know, if people are confused, you can see that in their faces. And you can say, I think there are questions now about this. I detect that this hasn't been understood. But when people's faces are so tiny that you can't see the expressions, then I don't really know how to teach. I was once asked if I'd give a teaching in Colorado that was recorded. And I said, well, this was in a studio, and I said, well, there'll be an audience, will there? And they said, oh, no, just you talking. And I said, I've got nothing to teach a microphone. I don't know. I don't know what the microphone was for me. And I'm not the kind of teacher who has a spiel. Like, I'll just get out there and talk, because what I say is related to people. And if there are no people there, then I've got nothing to say. And so I don't really understand that, apart from teachers who are primarily public speakers, and the audience is irrelevant. But I've never understood that as teaching.
Something else that seemed to be coming across increasingly regularly now is a variation of mixing psychedelic drugs in some form with Dzogchen practice, as a suggestion there being that it's a way of reaching a deeper level of meditation experience or something. What would your view on that be as a possibility of a way forward?
Well, fortunately, my opinion is largely irrelevant, being that Dudjom Rinpoche was against it. So as he was against it, then I'm also against it. But I'm also against it for my own reasons, that whatever you do in terms of whatever you realize has got to come out of yourself, not out of something else. You know, the chemical alteration of the brain makes it seem as if it's connected with the brain, and it's not. This is, you know, back in the 80s, there was a lot of monitoring people's brainwaves. And alpha rhythms were said to be the thing, you know. But alpha rhythms don't actually prove a great deal. Apparently, you can get them from eating a curry. You know, you're more prone to alpha rhythms if you do that. But you know, looking at brainwaves or brainwave patterns is like trying to work out what the meal was from looking at the feces. You don't learn that much from feces, or you may if you look at their constituents with a microscope or something, but you know, you can't get back to the fish and chips from that. that's not available. So taking something that alters your brain chemistry is going to have nothing to do with meditation in the end. I mean, you could they actually put Namkhai Norbu Rinpoche on one of these things and asked him if he'd go into a state of absorption. He did, and his brainwave patterns were totally normal. It showed nothing at all. So from that, I gathered that it's a bunch of nonsense. It's not that I'm anti-science or anything. I think it is interesting. I think that meditation does have an effect on brain function, yes, but you can't then reverse that and say that altering the brain function has an effect on meditation. Because the whole question there is not really an issue of materiality. For example, there was Gegen Khyentse Rinpoche, who'd become senile dementia. Apparently, you're not allowed to call it that now. There's some other word you're supposed to use, but anyway, that's what he had. He couldn't remember the names of his monks at all, but he could still teach. So some parts of him had been affected by it, but it didn't affect his teaching at all. He was quite lucid. So if you actually are able to stabilize in terms of Shine Latong Nime Lundrup, then whether you go senile or not is irrelevant, because the senility is the brain, it's not the awareness. So on that basis, experimenting with drugs really only puts you at risk of psychosis if you happen to be that way inclined in terms of how you are. It is dangerous for some people, unless you're Keith Richards, who seems to be able to absorb everything and live forever, but I think he's relatively rare.
A lot of these initiatives that we see in the Buddhist world to change things seem to have as their driving force the idea that Vajrayana should change with the times. Could you say something about that as a as an idea changing with the times?
I don't know what changes with time. It gets later usually, and it gets dark and you go to bed. There are different things that happen in different epochs of the world. There are different ideas, but I'd like to know what it is that has changed. It's all very well to say that, but unless you say 20 years ago it was like this and now these things have changed, you need to identify what the change is. Otherwise, that statement is unfounded. You need to specify the change. So otherwise I can't answer that question, because I'd like to know, well, what has changed? We all have a third ear, a second nose, or we now no longer feel pain, or we now, what's different?
So if someone was to say there have been advances in psychology in terms of understanding the mind, or there have been advances in science, or we have a greater understanding of equality and wanting to introduce equality into teaching situations, all of this, would you say that they don't actually denote any change in people? This is just...
Yeah, I would say they don't denote any change at all. In terms of equality in teaching, I've always known equality, particularly with Chimi Rigsman Rinpoche, with Khunzang Dorje Rinpoche and Dorje Rinpoche too, that there have been instances where they've needed to ask questions of me about certain things. Dorje Rinpoche wanted to know what blues was. I explained to him. We got onto various subjects in which I had to explain surrealism to him and what that was, and describe various paintings. He was very interested in that. And that was a situation of equality with him, because he was finding out about blues and surrealism from me. Then Chimi Rigsman Rinpoche wanted me to take photographs, and I had to tell him that I can't take photographs in this light. We're going to either have to get lighting in or take them outside, because you're not going to get a good result. And that was me teaching him about photography. So that's always been there. So I don't know what the demand for equality is in that sense. Maybe it's more because I suppose I've come through Inner Tantra and Dzogchen teaching, and the saying runs, the higher the jhana, the lower the throne. This is because, you know, from a Dzogchen perspective, everyone is beginninglessly realized. And so this has to be reflected in the nature of the teacher-student relationship. So that's been there all along in terms of Dzogchen. So Namkhon Norbu Rinpoche always used to say that his teacher would help with milking the dri. He'd be working along with people, and this has always been my experience. Thachan Rinpoche worked alongside his students, in the art yurt, making things. So that has always been there. Now, equality doesn't function when someone is learning something. Because when you're learning things you don't know, skills you don't have, then that's hierarchic, and you can't get rid of that unless you want to stop learning. So that makes no sense in particular, and the equality that is desired has always been there, particularly in the Dzogchen tradition.